shooting from the lip.
We're taking no prisoners here. Real opinions for real people.
John Gaunt, shooting from the lip.
Good afternoon and welcome to another edition of Shooting from the Lip on Sputnik International with me, John Gaunt. Got a great guest for you today, Martin Daubney, the Brexit MEP. He wants to be a Brexit MP. Will they get any MPs? Will Nigel Farage at last be voted into Westminster? And are they making a difference? But apart from that, we'll talk about HS2. We'll talk about arming the police. We'll talk about Greta, Harry, Meghan and Elton John. And of course, we'll have to talk about Boris and Brexit. There's loads of stuff to talk about. And I'm sure Martin will shoot from the lip. And I'm delighted to say Martin Daubney, MEP, joins us now.
Shooting from the lip.
Hi, Martin.
Always a pleasure, Gaunty, and what a spicy menu we have to look forward to today. Beautiful.
I know, it's meant to be the silly season, but it's incredible what is going on at the moment. Let's talk first, though, this morning, or this afternoon, if we can, about HS2. Looks like Boris is nicking all your policies.
Yeah, I mean, it would come as no surprise. I mean, it's great. It's very flattering and all the rest of it. But, you know, the bottom line is the Brexit Party made it a part of our key manifesto pledge, our policy platform, to ditch this ridiculous white elephant that literally nobody wants apart from the people whose idea it was, who seems to have been very heavily lobbied by the likes of Lord Adonis. Who the bleep is he, you may add? This is a George Osborne white elephant. In all my time campaigning across the West Midlands for the European elections, you know, I did not meet a single person who wanted this. It's a colossal waste of money. It's disruptive. And the only benefit to people in the Midlands was that people going from London can wave at them as they go past. Although, blink and you'll miss it because they'll be going so quickly, there is literally no benefit. It's a way of ferrying rich Londoners around the country 10 minutes faster than usual. It's ridiculous. People want good transport in their own regions to be able to get east to west. We have this obsession with ferrying rich businessmen in and out of London. It totally exemplifies everything that's wrong about this London-centric political bias, and it's time to pull the plug on it now.
Okay, so you want to pull the plug. Do you think this review is serious, or do you think this is just a put-up job by Boris and they'll just carry on?
I think it's a classic smokescreen. We are committing to scrapping it. The Tories are committing to reviewing it. Well, what does that mean? A review could have any outcome. It seems to me a classic front to buy time to allow the Tories to dodge the bullet. They'll put it on a back burner. They'll focus on other things. And I suspect down the line, they'll probably just keep on doing it and hope people get bored and it just rumbles on down the track.
Yeah, well, you say that, but come on, we've spent an absolute fortune on it, billions and billions. And what about the jobs? You, the Brexit Party, would be condemning these people to the dole queue.
No, we've made it clear all along. This is £100 billion of money that we just do not need to spend. It's £100 billion of money that we have pledged into other concrete things, the creation of jobs across regions, fast broadband for everybody, not just those living in urban centres. You know, there is so much that we could do with this money. We're embarking on a conference tour around Great Britain where we want to talk to businessmen, to members of the public. You know, what do you want in your area? What could we spend this money on? Along with axing 50% of the foreign aid, this all adds up to £200 billion. Over the course of an election campaign. This is what people want. They want concrete things for their regions. You can give jobs by, you know, doing other things other than HS2. There are more than one way of providing welfare for British citizens. But the Tories are so tied to this now, emotionally, politically, financially. Have they got the guts to pull the plug? I don't think they have.
Talk to me about fibre everywhere. What do you mean by that? Do you mean, like, I mean, at the moment I'm living in the centre of Warwick, it's okay, but I lived out in the countryside and I couldn't get proper broadband. That is unfair, isn't it? A farmer in the Lake District should be able to get broadband as much as somebody living in Birmingham.
Absolutely true. And, you know, it's not just unfair there. It's bad for the economy. It's bad for business. It drains brains from areas where there's no broadband. It forces people to live in cities, and it's just not good for the economy. So we see it as a duty to supply great broadband to everybody in the UK, irrespective of their geography. You know, the funny thing, you get the train to Brussels as MEPs, and the broadband, the Wi-Fi on the Eurostar is absolutely fantastic as soon as you get on the other side of the Channel Tunnel. And you know, as soon as you hit Great Britain, you can't get a blooming signal anywhere, Gaunty.
I'm going to back you on that because I've been on that trip and you are absolutely right. Let's move on. Arming the police with tasers, evidently now in, I think it's Northamptonshire. Is that something you welcome?
I think it's something that should rightly be explored. You know, it's totally unacceptable that we see policemen being murdered on the beat. Another one in Bristol was facially disfigured. And we are definitely seeing, I think, an erosion of respect for law and order. And there's no easier way of exemplifying that than the horrible conditions that frontline officers have to face. Now, of course, if we are talking about advancing towards fully arming police, like in America, well, I don't think any of us want to go down that route. Although it must be said, when I lived in London after the 7/7 bombings and there were police on the streets with machine guns, I'd never felt safer as a Londoner.
Absolutely.
In all my time here. I must confess, you know, it gave me, I've got nothing to hide. What do I have to fear by having armed police officers? But we must do something to protect police officers, especially with declining numbers of coppers. And we know that their enemies are getting better and better equipped. Look at the explosion of knife crime and gun crime. We need to equip police officers, I think, in a justifiably robust manner. And I think this idea is certainly worthy of merit.
Well, you say it's worthy of merit, then you must also be applauding Priti Patel as the new Home Secretary, talking about tougher sentences, 10 meaning 10. Again, a similar policy that she seems to have taken from the Brexit Party.
Yeah, I mean, the Conservatives have always historically been the party of law and order, haven't they? And then, of course, Theresa May went a softer Sadiq Khan on stop and search, the cuts to the numbers of police in the metropolitan area in particular. And these had tangible effects with the knife crime explosion, London moped crime, acid crime, if you like, modern crimes that filling the vacuum of a lack of police resource. So, you know, it was inevitable, I think, that the Tories had to come out with a more robust response on law and order. And I think Priti Patel is making all the right moves to, along with HS2, and along with other things that the Brexit Party have been putting forward, you can see, I think, an amalgamation of our kind of mindset back into a more traditional centre-right Conservative Party. And it seems to be resonating pretty well with the electorate.
Do you think, though, that tougher sentences would deter these young kids who are killing each other, particularly in London? They've been offered riches beyond your wildest imagination. That's why they're doing it. How do you stop it? I mean, I was talking to Godfrey Bloom a couple of weeks ago, and he said, we've got to decriminalise or legalise drugs. What's your own view?
Well, I mean, that's something that's worked in certain areas. If you look to Portugal, for example, where particularly opiates are treated as a medical problem rather than a criminal problem, it certainly seems to have borne fruit, although it hasn't been without its challenges, of course, because more people dabble with drugs if you make them legal, certainly in the short term. It's, hey, I'll try this stuff. There's no risk of penalty. So in the short term, there's more of a risk. But in terms of how we punish people more punitively, I mean, for starters, where are we going to put them? I mean, the prison system is already creaking at the gills. I spend time in prisons talking to men about masculinity and how they can keep their mental health more buoyant. And, you know, the prison guard and the ward system, the wardens themselves, you know, again, are rapidly understaffed. So it's going to cost a lot of money to
do this.
Yeah,
but Boris is putting that in. He's going to build more prisons. So, again, he's doing your job for you. It leads on to almost ask, is there any need for the Brexit Party?
Well, absolutely, because what we're seeing, I think, even today, I mean, you know, politics moves so quickly at the moment. It's like being a stockbroker. You need four screens on the go. No, you need Sky News here. You need the Gaunty Show there. There's so much to keep up with. But absolutely, I think, you know, if the Brexit Party hadn't existed, Boris Johnson wouldn't be Prime Minister. None of the Brexit Party policies would have been amalgamated in, and we wouldn't be pushing this all the way to the wire. although we are still suspicious of the fact that Boris, while making all the right noises at the moment, he's been on TV 15 minutes ago with Macron, who is saying there is no room for a new manoeuvre. So how is Boris going to magically produce a solution to the backstop in 30 days when nobody has done that in 3 years? It remains to be seen. It's a huge challenge.
Well, it is a huge challenge. But, of course, last night, woman over there, Angela Merkel, she seemed to back him, gave him 30 days. And even Macron, you can interpret what he's saying as rather grudgingly, I'll give it a go if we can do it. And if he did that in 30 days, wouldn't that just be Theresa May's deal part 8 or something?
Yes, it would. It'll be the withdrawal agreement mark 4, the return of the withdrawal agreement. A nightmare on Downing Street, as far as we're concerned. It would just be a watered-down surrender treaty, a second part of the worst deal in history. If we are going to be remaining in the customs union, if we are going to be tied to the European Court of Justice so we do not have control over our own laws, if we cannot have control over our own borders, and I know we're talking about the immigration numbers in a minute, now then we are still in. We're half in, we're half out, and we are still committed to the £15 billion per year, which is what we are currently paying, and there'll be no chance at all of keeping the £39 billion divorce payment. So I think we can see that the way we're going appears to be Theresa May's reheated pig with lipstick.
Okay, so is Boris conning the public then?
I think he's making the right noises. And, you know, it's really, really interesting to look at what Brexit Party voters themselves are saying, because it's true that a huge proportion of our voters were from the blue corner and disaffected Tories who felt totally betrayed by Theresa May and the way that the Remain institution refused to negotiate hard. They're giving Boris a fair crack of the whip, but they're certainly starting to say, well, it doesn't feel like we're heading for a no deal.
Well, you say that, but the polls show that a lot of them are deserting you and going back to the Tories and Boris, no?
Yeah, I mean, that is true. But look, you know, today's poll is tomorrow's chip paper. As you know, if you run your life by polls, no, Brexit wouldn't have happened. Donald Trump wouldn't be president of the United States. Polls are an interesting thing for journalists like us to talk about, but they are just a barometer, and the weather can change very quickly. Certainly, if Boris, you know, doesn't start delivering something we can see as a tangible meaty Brexit, those polls can soon flip and we can soon find ourselves storming back up again.
Now, you say you're going to stand as an MP in any election that comes along down the line. Is that because you seriously think that the Brexit Party will have an electoral chance if Boris doesn't deliver on Halloween?
I think if Boris doesn't deliver on Halloween, then we have a massive chance. You know, then that's when we're in a situation where all bets are off. You know, we saw that Brexit broke politics. We saw that the two-party system was exposed for the useless situation that it was. And we came in with a new way of doing things, particularly across the Midlands. I'm standing in Ashfield, Nottinghamshire, where my mum has lived for 21 years. It's an area I know very well. These are the areas that are traditional Labour heartlands. It's not just a Tory thing, Gauntie. You know, these are traditional Labour heartlands that voted 71% to leave. They're not going to go Boris Johnson anytime soon, I don't think. Now, they're looking for a true working class party that represents leavers. And I think there's a third way, and that way is the Brexit Party. And we are here to apply pressure all the way to the wire. We are the wolf at the door, making sure that Boris brings home the bacon.
And do you think that Corbyn is toast then in those Labour heartlands? Are they all coming to the Brexit Party?
Well, I mean, historically, you know, those areas have been pretty partisan Labour. But I think that's changed because, you know, Corbyn abandoned the working classes, and the working classes, I think, will abandon him. Now, he does not speak in any way that resonates with these communities. He's seen as a metropolitan, London elite, all the things that we talk about so often, they've now become cliches. You know, the Thornbury, Diane Abbott, John McDonnell, sort of North London sort of triage, the coven of Marxists, does not appeal to the former coal mining communities in any way. and they find it hard to go Tory. This is where I think we come in. This is where we can talk in a way that resonates, and we can get it away from academia, from identity politics, from everything being racist and sexist, back into a real world where people want real politics with real people who've done a real day's work in their life. And that cuts out, I'm afraid, almost everybody in the modern Labour Party.
Okay, we'll talk more about that, because I certainly want to talk about the woke generation. I want to talk about Greta. I want to talk about Harry. I want to talk about Meghan and Elton John. We'll talk a little bit more about who wanted to be caretaker PM. You are listening to Shooting from the Lip on Sputnik International with me, John Gaunt, and my special guest today, Martin Daubney, who's an MEP for the Brexit Party. Don't dare go away.
Shooting from the Lip.
We're taking no prisoners here. Real opinions for real people.
John Gaunt. Shooting from the Lip.
OK, welcome back to the second half of Shooting from the Lip with my special guest today, Martin Daubney. You were just mentioning PC there, Martin. Let's just go on to that. What do you make of this Greta girl? What do you make of Harry, Meghan and Elton?
Yeah, well, Greta Thunberg, of course, has become something of a modern-day Mother Teresa of the climate change religion, because that's what it is. And to challenge this in any way makes you a climate change denier. That's another box you can be put in now, along with being racist, sexist, transphobic, you name it. This is another modern sin. But I wonder if we should be trusting the judgment of a teenager with autism over, you know, proper scientists who seem to know their stuff better. And I'm particularly concerned when I talk to members of the Brexit Party about the commitments to going carbon neutral by 2025, 2050, whenever it is, how expensive this is going to be, what it's going to do to business, the regulatory red tape, and the rest of the world probably won't take any notice. I mean, I can't see China or India suddenly be swept along by Twitter politics anytime soon, can you?
No, and also there's kind of a report today saying we won't be able to have private cars in a few years. This just is practical, just like when they flew four private flights for Harry and Meghan whilst they're lecturing. That's what annoys me.
Yeah, I think it's just a case of double standards. You know, there's been so much talk about this being racist, because, of course, you know, we're back to that again. Everything's racist. But, you know, if you go back to Prince Andrew, Air Miles Andy, he was always facing the same criticisms. He was taking private jets everywhere to go and play golf or whatever it was he was up to. We'll go into that a bit later. But the fact of the matter is, the big mistake of Harry and Meghan is they can't resist banging on to the rest of us, you know, in this sanctimonious, preachy way that we should be carbon neutral while they're kind of flying, you know, at 70,000 feet in some Lear jets, giving a royal wave. It just doesn't sit, does
yeah,
it?
Yeah, but hold on. Elton did pay for the carbon, but I think that's a bit like Marie Antoinette, isn't it? Let them eat cake. Because basically what they're saying is, us like Chris Martin or whatever from Coldplay, we can fly because we'll pay an extra load of dosh, but you can't. I mean, you know, I've just seen on the news Prince William's just flown on a Flybe jet up to Balmoral. If it's good enough for him, why ain't it good enough for the Ginga one?
Yeah, well, I call it Bono syndrome. You know, it's always back to that. It's back to, you know, Bono, you know, getting down on his knees and telling the rest of us we should be, you know, help, you know, starving and blah, blah. But the bottom line is they live a very different lifestyle themselves. The thought of Prince Harry and Meghan being barefoot with Katy Perry in some billionaire's paradise, you know, while playing, lighting scented candles and playing meditation music, is enough to make me want to vomit. Now, this is not a world that any ordinary person can even comprehend, let alone somehow sign up to. We are clearly seeing playboys and billionaires dishing out their advice, and I think the rest of the people in the world just think, oh, screw you.
Yeah, well, talking of that, what do you make of the Owen Jones assault? I mean, no one can condone any kind of political violence, obviously, but it's all a bit odd.
Yeah, look, I mean, if any journalist is being attacked for any of their views, then this is wrong. We live in an era where we are quick to judge. You know, these people are very highly and readily identifiable. But also, we are quick to jump to conclusions about who the perpetrators were, what happened. Now, I'm not saying I don't believe anything that's happened here, but I'm saying is, let's see the evidence.
How does he know they were far right, but he doesn't know what they were saying? It just doesn't add up to me. I'm not saying he's lying either. But where's the CCTV? And To me, he looked like he'd been scratched by his cat on his tummy. It wasn't like a proper kicking. It didn't appear to be. I may be being unfair, but it's a few days down the line now, and he's making these serious allegations. And when he says far right, you know what he means, Martin. White working class men.
Yeah, and I've had my teeth knocked out by white working class men before. I never thought to question their politics. I was more interested in kind of just keeping alive. And often it was over things like wearing the wrong football shirt. So, you know, violence is bad, but we need to be sure about the motives before we jump to conclusions.
But the press have loved it. The MSM are all over it. He was given a free platform to go on to BBC, for example, and he seemed to have forgotten that he laughed at the milkshakes attack on Nigel Farage. He seems to have forgotten he tacitly supports Antifa and those dreadful assaults on Nigel Farage being able to have a Sunday lunch with his family.
Yeah, it's an important point, this. And I think it's that kind of selective myopia that we see from those on the identity political left who thought it was hilarious. The hashtag punch a Nazi, the milkshaking, all of that was fair game. You know, anti-fascists setting fire to American campuses, that's okay because they're stopping Trump talking. And then as soon as you know, somebody breaks a fingernail on the left, it's the rise of the far right and we're going back to the Third Reich. And it's an entirely disproportionate reaction. We either condemn all violence, Gaunty, or we look to the reasons behind why any of it happens. I would say it's more sensible to condemn all of it rather than being selective in our outrage. But then selective outrage is the bread and butter of the liberal left.
Yeah, and of course nowhere better is that exemplified than on the BBC and increasingly on Sky News, in my opinion. I mean, do you think they're giving fair coverage now to Johnson and indeed to the whole Brexit movement? I mean, there was a story the other day, the only newspaper who seemed to take it was the Daily Express, where the BBC top knobs have apologised for that Alistair Campbell-inspired reading of the results, which became the news, that i.e. most people voted Remain in the European elections because they forgot to add in the Tories. I mean, it's outrageous, Martin.
Yeah, that was one of the most extraordinary things I've ever seen, because when Campbell went into that tirade, I just left the NEC where I'd been voted in as an MEP. We were feeling rightly, you know, high as a kite on life about the fact that we won 30.5% of the vote. The entire Britain, from the tip of Cumbria to Land's End, was turquoise blue. And there was Campbell saying that, no, in actual fact, Remain won. At first it was funny, then it was, well, is Diane Abbott doing his maths? And then it was like, no, this is just pure insanity. Not only that, but it's being cosseted and it's being welcomed and it's being allowed a platform. It's anti-science. It's anti-democratic and it's delusional. And I think that's another big, big question that Brexit has asked of Great Britain. It's not just about breaking politics. I think it broke the British media, because the media and politicians are not representative of the British public. Oftentimes when I was on the Sky News and all those things I did for years before I got into this game, I was the only Remainer on a panel that was consistent for all of that time. And I never once complained about political bias, Gaunty. I just fought my corner as best I could and tried to represent Brexiteers. But I'm afraid as we reach the end game, we're seeing the true colours. I think we have a problem with our media in the UK. And I think we need more programmes like yours. We need more channels that represent the 52%, because we have a big misbalance, I think, and we need to look at that post-Brexit.
Well, I think post-Brexit, all we need to do is scrap Ofcom, allow bias in news like they do in the States, and then you can pick what you want. And then you, like a newspaper, when you buy a newspaper, you know more or less what the Sun's politics is, what the Telegraph and what the Guardian, and you can buy which one you want. We're grown up. On a multi-platform age, we shouldn't be told that the BBC are meant to be impartial. Well, we don't need the BBC full stop. But do you follow where I'm coming from? Channel 4 News, publicly funded. It's like, it's funny. I watch it every night. It's one of the best comedies. But everything is slanted left and it's not right.
Yeah, the director of Channel 4 News on television today saying they're debating, you know, is it allowable just to call out the Prime Minister, Boris Johnson, as a liar? Because they say he's been proven to be a liar. Now, if we are to have an impartial and balanced state broadcaster, you could argue we don't need a Fox News equivalent in the UK or a CNN equivalent in the UK, although you could argue that Channel 4 is akin to CNN in terms of its broad political alignment. But as we clearly do not have a balanced state broadcast. And I think you're right. I do think, for example, while people would decry this as the beginning of the end of the world, if we were to look at something like a Fox News for the UK, I think it could be hugely popular. I mean, look at Nigel Farage's show on LBC. It does really, really well. And, you know, people don't phone in there, you know, kind of kissing his behind. You know, people phone in and have a pop at him as well. People have a pop at you, then they're going to you all the time. And it's fun. It's part of the debate. But we don't get those debates anymore.
We don't. But and I noticed this on Sky and on BBC and the paper reviews. They're all identical. Anyway, they're all part of the bubble. Let's just go on, if we can, talking about the media. Let's talk about Jihadi Jack. According to his mum this morning, after calling Sajid Javid a coward — I thought her son was a coward, but there we are — she's now said the British government have made my son a scapegoat.
I think he made himself a scapegoat, didn't he? You know, now I'm a politician, I'm probably meant to be diplomatic on this, but I'm afraid when it comes to people like this, as far as I'm concerned, they surrender their right to have a say the moment they join a terrorist organisation that is intent on obliterating the entire Western world, and in particular, the host nation that brought you up, that educated you, that fed you, that kept you safe, and suddenly you turn your back on that and you wish to destroy it. I think at that point, any sympathy is out.
I think you're right. Let's move on, because we've only got a few minutes left. Let's talk about Epstein. How the hell did he commit suicide? And then secondly, Prince Andrew. Each day there are more stories coming out. Has Andrew now got to put himself up for interview? And where? How? What? Why?
You know, it's a PR nightmare for the royal family, isn't it? You know, if you become the story, then you've done something wrong. And, you know, undeniably here, they can huff and they can puff about the fact that this is abhorrent, and they condemn it and all the rest of it. But it's just looking a little bit too close for comfort now. If I were advising the palace now, I'd be saying, look, I really do think we need some sort of a public profile interview, maybe like the Lady Diana one, a moment of truth, because I'm afraid, you know, with allegations of this nature, the conspiracy theorists will run rife. And in the internet era and the Twitter era, this will never go away. It will be forever there. And, you know, the royal family should be having a really easy and lovely PR time, shouldn't it? You know, they've got a new baby, they've got a multicultural bride, and suddenly we're back to all this. I think that it's a dreadful mess and it needs to be sorted out.
Okay, a minute left. Get your crystal balls out and tell me how things are going to pan out over the next few months, or 30 days even.
I sincerely hope that I'm popping a cork on Halloween and I've been made redundant as an MEP, because Rural Britannia, Great Britain, is sailing into the sunset free from the European Union with a clean WTO Brexit. I pray that happens. I suspect it may not. Will we go to an election? Will Boris tweak the backstop just enough for most people who are bored to death now of this to believe? Would he then go into a new negotiation of 2 years on the rest of it? And will that get signed off? Hammond would vote for that. The Remainers would vote for that. And maybe most Brexiteers would vote for that. Now, that would not be Brexit to me. I think we must pursue this all the way down the line. That's our job. We will keep fighting. And if Boris bodges it, we'll be the wolf at his door.
So you still want a full exit on WTO terms rather than a rearranged backstop? That won't be enough for you. That won't be enough.
Absolutely, it will not. You know, I think we cannot go down the route of Brexit in name only. A surrender treaty, a reheated revisit of Theresa May's deal would be a dereliction of duty, or the betrayal of Brexit. And if it's for that reason that we must keep fighting all the way till the end, whenever that will be.
And if there was a general election, would the Brexit Party get seats?
I think we absolutely would. And look, it depends how far this goes on. It depends what Boris's form of Brexit or not is. If he can't deliver by the 31st of October, I think all bets are off. We can really, really steam into the Tories and the Labour Party, who we think will be wiped out across the Midlands and the North for betraying Brexit. It'll be a fantastic thing to be a part of. And if that happens, Gauntie, I just cannot wait.
That was Martin Daubney, Shooting from the Lip, here on Sputnik International. I'll be back next week with another guest who will be just as forthright. But for now, Martin, thank you very, very much indeed.
Shooting from the Lip.
If you've got a view, I want to hear it. If you agree, I want to hear it. If you disagree, get in touch. Tell me why I'm wrong, but you better have a good argument.
This is Shooting from the Lip.